Welcome to the Serious TV Drama Podcast. I'm Scott, and joining me this evening, it's Brian. Hey, Brian, how you doing?
Hey, Scott, I'm good. How you doing?
I'm okay. We're, as you know, and I guess everyone out there has just figured out, we're doing a very lo-fi operation this evening. Literally playing music off my iPhone just to get the opening done here. But that's the way we're going about things for this very special podcast and what I hope will be a special series of podcasts where we're actually going to be covering the new HBO series. And I have no idea if this is just going to be a limited series, one season only, or if they plan for it to be an ongoing series. I've not heard, or maybe I just haven't read enough articles about it as of yet. But we're talking about Perry Mason, which premiered this Sunday night on HBO. I was intrigued and mildly excited about this the moment I heard about it. Mainly because I have a lot of knowledge and history in my own background with the Perry Mason character, not simply a person who as a kid would maybe have caught the occasional rerun of the Perry Mason TV show, which I did. It did find its way into syndication even when I was a kid in the mid to late 70s. You could still find it every once in a while. But more so for me is the fact that I grew up in a house where the living room was lined with bookcases, and I would say 90 to 95% of the books in my mother's collection, and we're not talking dozens or hundreds, we're talking thousands of books, were mysteries. You know, basically the collected works of everyone from Agatha Christie to Ellery Queen to Nero Wolfe and so on. And of course, there was one bookcase that was pretty much devoted to Earl Stanley Gardner, the creator and writer of Perry Mason, who I think I remember reading this once upon a time. I think the works of Earl Stanley Gardner and Perry Mason, I think he might be like the number three biggest selling author in history or something along those lines. I might be wrong about that, but I think it's some astronomical number of, you know, a writer that some people might not even realize who it is. It was like, oh yeah, I mean, you got your J.K. Rowling's and your Stephen King's, whatever, but yeah. Earl Stanley Gardner, go look it up. Guy sold like something like 900 million books or some ridiculous number. Again, I don't think that's the number. I'm just making that shit up right now. But my point being is that when I would get bored and I didn't have a book that I'd already taken out from the library, like the aforementioned Stephen King thing, I would often just pick my way through her bookcases. So I remember reading quite a few Earl Stanley Gardner, Perry Mason books. And by the way, they're quite good. So which then made me get excited when I actually saw the TV series when I was a kid. And I remember going, oh, the TV series isn't as good as the books. Hey, there's something you never hear anyone say. The TV show's not as good as the book. So then I heard about this TV show and I was like, oh, wow, Perry Mason. And then when I saw the first trailer, like, wait, is this Perry Mason? Because they have really taken it in a very, very different direction. So, since I just did a whole little spiel there, Brian, did you have any kind of preconceived notions going into this? And were you familiar with the Perry Mason character at all?
I'm familiar with the Perry Mason character. I wasn't as familiar with the books as the show. I watched the show. My mom would watch the show when I was younger. I enjoyed it. Very much. It was interesting seeing Raymond Burr because I had known him as Ironsides, and then seeing him, you know, as a younger version when I caught up to Perry Mason. I think there were reruns on Superstation TBS or one of those stations where I saw it regularly. But I liked it. I can't say like it's the reason I became a criminal defense lawyer, but
that's where we were going to go with this. You know that. That's why you're here.
But I will say this is a show that snuck up on me when I heard about it. It was almost ready to go, and boom, here it was. And it's one of the things I hadn't kept up with, and I was interested to see what it would be like, and I look forward to podcasting about it. I will say the thing that I always liked about the show, and it, I didn't know this at the time, but to the current version, that also is very true, is a lot of lawyer shows don't focus on the defense investigation of cases. They focus on the police investigation of a case. And Perry Mason had an investigator, you know, and all a good defense lawyer has an investigator. And the stress, stressing the importance of an investigator to a criminal defense lawyer, I liked that of the show when it was, you know, the old version. Mm-hmm. And I like that investigation is, you know, sort of the, so far, the bread and butter of this show.
Right, absolutely. And it's a fascinating choice what they're doing with this, because, you know, if you were just told, hey, I hear HBO is going to be doing a new Perry Mason series next year, you're like, really? HBO is doing Perry Mason? That seems strange. Are you sure it's not like TNT or, you know, CBS or something? Because it sounds like, you know, your basic lawyer formula, procedural, whatever. And then when you start either reading about it or you see the first trailer drop, you realize, oh, they're going full tilt noir here. And this is, and then you find out more about it. And just, I know everyone's already watched it, because why would you be listening to this podcast otherwise? But we're taking place in, you know, the early 30s in Los Angeles. You know, I expect to see J.J. Giddies walk by any minute now, you know. And I think the thing that one of the things that probably attracted both of us to the series, if I may speak for both of us for a moment, and even though I'm probably about to mispronounce his name, so maybe I shouldn't have been the one to bring this up, is it Reese or Rye? It's Reese, right? It's not Rye.
Yeah, Matthew okay. Reese.
Thank God. Okay, Matthew Reese is the title character here. And I believe it's safe to say we are both big fans of him from his work on The Americans.
Correct? Absolutely.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Knocked it out of the park on that show. I would genuinely say, not only would I say that show got better from season to season, because, you know, you can go back and forth on that point, because there were some earlier seasons that might have been better, but his performance, I do think, got better from season to season, most definitely. And, hers also, but we're not talking about her because she's not on the show. Anyway, but what really sealed it for me with this was when I first heard about it, I was excited because, oh, Perry Mason, I like that character, and it's an HBO show. It's got to be at least decent. And then when we discovered, oh, no, they're going like war, and guess what? Perry Mason is not going to be a criminal attorney, not yet at least. We're delving earlier in his past where he apparently, as he said, he's an investigator. You know, he's your classic noir PI. And one of the things he tends to do is work on behalf of another lawyer. The John Lithgow character, what's his name? E.B. or Elias Burchard? Is that his name? I think that's his name.
I don't remember the name, but I think E.B.
I believe they're calling him E.B. throughout the thing. I think it's E.B., which is short for Elias Burchard or Jonathan. Oh, yeah, the last name is actually Jonathan, which is an odd name to have as your last name. But we could just call him E.B. By the way, John Lithgow is just money in the bank whenever he's on screen, and pretty much anything over the last several years, if not his entire career. And I definitely enjoyed Lithgow in this this episode as well.
Yeah, it was a really neat dynamic to see the Perry Mason character taking orders from a lawyer who correctly did the right thing to go to the questioning of a client to try to protect that client and see those. Hopefully, I think what we're going to see is him instilling the virtues in Perry that maybe Perry later comes to embody.
Right, because my first thought I'm having while I'm watching this episode unfold, beyond trying to just follow the actual story and the two different cases that we see being played out during the course of the episode, while also trying to piece together Perry's actual backstory here, because I had never really... one of the things about Perry Mason, at least as far as the TV shows are concerned, perhaps more so than the books, and these are books that I haven't read in, good Lord, it's probably been at least 40 years. So I'm probably not going to remember them too well. Yes, I'm that old. But I never really gave him any thought to the backstory of Perry Mason. Much like, you know, I never gave anybody thought to the backstory of Hercule Poirot, for that matter, or Miss Marple, or, you know, I did think about, I said Nerwolf before, when I should have said Rex Stout. I just realized I made a little book mistake earlier, but probably no one heard it until I just pointed it out. So I'm wondering, because we see that Della Street is working for EB, and anyone who knows the mythos of Perry Mason, Jesus, like he's Batman. And how about that Batman news today? Okay, no derailing. So you think, and also I do get the impression from the dialogue, obviously, that not only has EB known Perry for some time, he knows his family. He's kind of like known him growing up. So I wonder if not only, as you said, EB might try to instill in him some of his learnings and teachings and ethics as far as lawyering is concerned, if this is actually the practice that Perry himself will one day take over, especially because Della Street being this guy, EB's assistant / secretary / whatever they would call her, we know her as being, that's the role she played for Perry Mason. So it just made me go, that's interesting. I'm still trying to see how this world-weary, down on his luck, almost classically hard-boiled cynic PI is going to end up being a criminal attorney, which almost makes me hope that it will be a continuing series, because I would love to see how that transition would take place.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. I thought the starting point's interesting, and I think you and I like shows and stories that sort of drip the information to you.
Yes.
And don't do a download of information that then you're supposed to know this is who this person is, that you learn who that character is slowly.
Right.
And I thought they did a really nice job giving you bits and pieces of him. And just since you mentioned it, so I don't forget, the one piece I was interested in learning, and my first theory of this is, I wonder, well, I won't say theory, speculation. My first thought was, I wonder if Perry's parents were murdered or killed simultaneously. And that's why he has neither of them, and he has the farm. Because you see, obviously, that was a working farm that's now become an airport, which is an odd combination.
Yes.
What was it that they say? A dairy farm with
two cows.
And an airport running through the middle of it.
Exactly.
So I think hopefully there's more that we'll learn as it goes along. But I really like the way they just gave us little bits and pieces of his backstory throughout the first episode.
Oh, yeah. I was very attuned to how they were doing that. I mean, cause as I've mentioned in other podcasts, I'm sure, a lot of times I approach things from, I hear my cat doing this little thing right behind me. So any noises you hear like that, it's due just being a pain in my ass. Anyway, I always derail my own thought train that way. I'm always intrigued by how you get exposition in and backstory and there's always a way to do it where it's either you kind of do it almost invisibly, where it's part of, say the classic way to do it is someone's being interrogated or they're being roughed up and you find out details that way, but it's not, you're not overcome with an information dump because you're too busy paying attention to the guy being beaten up or being tortured or something like that. It's a weird example for me to come up with, but that's just one. I do recall that there are at least, who knows, probably practically every scene with him, they find a nice little way to do that. For example, say the scene when he meets the mother of the baby that was kidnapped and then, essentially murdered, I guess. And she picks up on the fact that by the way he smokes, that he must be like a World War I veteran. That's a nice
Yeah.
that's a nice little piece of business there.
Yeah, I like that a lot too. That it's not him, or someone talking about him. It's just coming out in conversation through people he happens to interact with. You find out he's dishonorably discharged. Well, they don't say that. I forget the term
No,
that
I think
he's.
they do say that. I think that when he's on the stand later on, I do think they say dishonorably discharged.
Do they use that word?
I believe they did. I'm almost positive. I remember going, "Oh, you mean he's like Klinger?" No, anyways.
Yeah. But I thought that was not, and it's funny, almost in a nod to the show, that you see the only thing seen in a courtroom is him on the stand being basically, cut to shreds by
Oh
an
yeah,
attorney.
I thought there would. I don't know if I would call it a meta moment exactly. Maybe I don't know if it quite qualifies for that. But by the same token, anyone watching the show, most people watching this, even if they're younger and they haven't seen an episode or a TV movie based on Perry Mason, and that's very likely, quite frankly, probably the bulk of people watching probably wouldn't have never seen him. You still know who he is. You've heard
Right.
the name. It's an iconic name. Just like you might not have ever seen Columbo, but you've heard the name. It's been mentioned on other TV shows and movies over the years. And the fact that someone that we know is going to end up being this world famous, criminal defense attorney, the one time we see him in a courtroom, he's on the stand. He's being cut up by the lawyer. And what I really liked about it, and this was the one I felt actually was the one real nod to his possible future, was the way he was critiquing what the lawyer did afterwards.
Absolutely.
Because he was,
Absolutely.
because did you know, I mean, did you? I know you did. You noticed that he's critiquing him almost the way another lawyer would, as opposed to just someone who had a bad experience, on the stand with a lawyer. I thought that was very interesting.
Absolutely. Which shows that, he's paid attention to what's going on and has already learned some things. That he's building into his database that, part of being a lawyer is protecting witnesses on the stand and making objections, and when somebody goes too far, you stop it. And he obviously is incensed. Now, I will say that I don't know that my judges would let you get away with swearing, but I did think it was funny the way it was handled, and his anger immediately afterwards to say, you don't do that, this is what you do, shows that he has some working knowledge of how that could have went better, not just as a witness, but as a lawyer.
Yes, absolutely. And the other overall, because now, and I love that. Without any planning, we've actually been talking about the different aspects of his backstory that we're kind of putting together here. Like what you said about his parents, which I got I got that sense as well, that they had both died, and most likely it was some sort of something off about it. I just imagine it would be, hence him having inherited the farm and so on, and maybe why he hasn't gotten rid of the farm, quite frankly. Because this was all, I guess for most people, a rather unexpected aspect to the character. You figure he's just going to be holed up in some ratty little apartment somewhere, or bungalow, or whatever, and it's this farm.
Yeah.
And I was like, wait. And then once we got to the scene where he's literally leading the cows into a barn, I went, wait a minute. did I miss something? Should I
Right.
hit rewind for a second? And luckily, only like 2 minutes had passed, so it wasn't much of a rewind. It's like, okay, all right. I like that they're just doing this, and it's for us to kind of like figure out what the hell is going on here, and you know, and stuff will, as you were saying, stuff will be dribbled and make more sense as it goes along, you know. Either it be like, so you have this whole very almost surreal situation with the farm, not to mention the woman and with the who's running, who is the person who I guess owns that airport runway and a pilot and pretty much owns him to a certain extent, so to speak. That was one of the more strenuous sex scenes I've seen on television in some time. I'm not sure how into it he was, but it was something to see.
But it was a moment of levity that the quick cuts and stuff that I found humorous and I liked their dynamic that she's almost like somebody that is a voice of reason to him and somebody that he likes to open up to when obviously he doesn't open up a lot. He's sort of closed down, and we get that from his failed relationship and his service. And there's some lines of communication with her that don't exist elsewhere in the world.
Right. I mean, it's. I mean, she has to bear witness to his interacting with his ex-wife, because he just wants to talk to his boy on New Year's Eve. Whereas she points out, apparently over the phone, no, now it's New Year's Day. I might say, if your kid's 9 years old, you probably shouldn't be trying to wake him up at like one something in the morning. But you know, he's drunk and he's also miserable and he's had a bad day.
Yeah, real bad day.
And lastly, it's also interesting just to, because now we're summarizing all these different things that have happened, but you know, between the war, what's ever happened with his family and this farm, whatever. I'm curious, and I'm going to bet, and even though I did not see anything to indicate this in the, you know, later this season on Perry Mason or anything, the little those clips we saw at the end. I'm wondering if there'll be like that one thing, that one event, that one incident that was what pushed him over the edge, that left him in the kind of condition, the damaged person that we're seeing right now. Because again, they are following, this is still a very much of a film noir kind of trope thing going on of the yin yang throughout the show. Which, by the way, I love. That's my favorite, one of my favorite genres, if not my favorite genre, period. But one of the classic things about characters of that nature, it's always that one thing. You know,
Right.
obviously the most famous one in the last 40 odd years was Chinatown, and well, it's actually Chinatown, because you know, forget it, Jake, it's Chinatown. And what
Right.
happened there, and how he tried to save someone and wasn't able to, and then that's echoed again what happens in that movie. I'm wondering what it is with him here, because he seems like he's, you know, he's gone through a lot. There's even a great, I think there's like a really great line of dialogue in the show, where someone makes a comment to him and he says something like, "How do you know what I've been through?" or something like that. I can't remember the exact line,
Yeah.
but which makes me wonder. I just said it's a great line. No, I don't remember, but I didn't write it down. Shut up.
Well, I will say, I'll add just briefly to that I think what I really liked is television has relied so heavily on flashback that I
Yes.
like that none of this was done through flashback, that it was all
Right.
done just by the way it dripped and drabbed out. And not that later a flashback might be, appropriate, might be the thing to do, but this show didn't immediately lean in to flashback as an easy way to tell what happened or what's going on.
Yeah, I agree. I think my assumption is we will get flashbacks at some point, but we didn't need to go there in the very first episode. It's like, for example, I would be very surprised, because I think it's an eight, if I'm not mistaken, it's an 8 episode series. I would be very surprised if over the course of all 8 episodes we do not get a flashback to him in the war. I'm expecting there'll be at least one scene flashback of him in the war. But I don't know if it's next episode or the 7th episode. I just have a, because obviously I think that's the kind of event and experience that probably has had a major impact on him and left him in the condition that he's been in. And it can take their time to do it, but it's like, you know, it's like Don Draper on Mad Men. You know, we didn't get a flashback of him in the war, you know, right off the bat, but we eventually do get one.
Right.
Which obviously, if anyone knows Mad Men, that obviously had a really big effect on him in his life. Hey, maybe Perry Mason's not his real name. No, anyway. So, getting back to the actual episode. So I think I mentioned beyond them dribbling little bits and pieces of his backstory so we start to form our picture of him as a character. And I do really like his character. I think it's very interesting. It tiptoes around the possibility of being cliched without falling in totally into cliche. And so that, so therefore it worked for me. He has moments throughout the episode which just push it away from being that. It's still gonna be, it still falls, obviously it falls squarely into that kind of character. You know, the only thing that didn't, I mean, no one knocked him out, at least, which is always a popular thing. You know, at one point you get knocked out. I don't care if you're Sam Spade or who, you know, whoever, you're gonna get knocked out. I'm sure it's gonna happen at some point. But I like that they kind of didn't go too far down that road. His reaction to seeing the dead baby.
Yeah, that was quite a shot.
And you got to have the series, because I mean, obviously, it being a creation, whether it be of not just prosthetics, just an entire. I mean, obviously, it's, they didn't get a real baby, but it's, there's still something shocking about seeing a dead infant on a television series.
Absolutely, and I like the. Knowing that it was being presented as a film noir type production, I like the way that they straddled the line and didn't lean too heavily into it. Like, for instance, one thing I was surprised by was the amount of sunlight and daytime and light that was throughout. Like, we didn't see a dark, rainy alley, you know, or a midnight meeting under a lamppost, or
right.
You know, there was lots of light and things happening at daytime, and I really liked that. I thought, and his character, going to what you were talking about, sort of, he's not like the Mike Hammer tough guy PI, but he's also not gonna take any crap. He sort of straddles that line between competence and self-destructiveness, but he's not a guy that's going to pull out a gun and start shooting or just beat people up, but he's also not a wimp. He's somewhere in the middle, and I like that, the way they depicted him, and that they didn't lean in too heavily into any one film noir trope while playing all the notes of that genre, I thought.
Right, I would tend to agree with that. So, just trying to gather my thoughts for a second here. So, we got a pretty fully realized picture for an introduction episode. I thought they did a really nice job of establishing who this character is, somewhat of what he was, and because it's quote unquote Perry Mason, it does open up the question of who is he going to be. Which is a little different than our usual situation when we meet, you know, PIs in the 30s. We're not also wondering, I wonder what's going to happen to that person 10 years from now. I wonder if he'll
Right.
be a lawyer. It's not exactly Better Call Saul, wondering when he's going to become Saul Goodman, but in a weird way, it kind of reminded me
In
of
a weird
that.
way, it kind of is.
There's a little bit of that, Talking about criminal lawyer,
When's he when's he gonna break good, right? And be Perry Mason.
When's he
I
going to
had
stop
that
getting?
thought too.
Oh, by the way, one of the things I loved in the episode, as far as things that were funny, because the thing that you had mentioned, I mean, I guess the sex scene has its humor. The thing I thought was really great that made me kind of chuckle was the first time he goes to the morgue. He goes to the morgue to find a new tie.
A tie, yeah.
That's a great gag. I was like, I don't know if I've seen that before. Someone must have done that before. It's such an obvious and great idea, because I love the fact that people kept pointing out the egg stain on his tie. There was something so, ooh, it's so Chandlerish,
Yeah.
And I know, I mean, oh, by the way, I mean Raymond Chandler,
Oh, yeah.
not Chandler Bing. So let me quickly just bounce over to the actual storylines we got going on here. Obviously, we've been kind of talking a lot about what the main thrust slash mystery of the series is going to be. It's revolving around this kidnapping, what appears to be a kidnapping gone wrong, and then we have the revelation towards the end that one of the cops that we saw earlier in the episode is actually, at the very least, part of the whole scheme, if not behind it, since he pretty much looks like he kills off the other three kidnappers that were involved in the scheme. So we already have that, but I feel like there has to be more than just that cop, because quite frankly, he doesn't seem quite smart enough to be behind all this, number one. And number two, there's kind of a big mystery about how does this guy, who's just basically a grocer, how is he able to lay hands on $100,000 in cash like that?
Right. Well, I think that, obviously we'll see the Robert Patrick character's development as being sort of the benevolent benefactor of the family, and the church angle that will play out time to come. But it is, I did think it was a bold choice to reveal that cop's role early on, which I mean, with 7 episodes to go, I mean, you have to think that's some sort of misdirect or some sort of setup that it's going to be one layer to crack of many layers.
Yeah, I absolutely. There's no way you reveal that without it being. In fact, the very revelation just made me go, okay, there's going to be a whole lot more to this, because that guy is no final domino. He's an early domino. And the fact that we know already, because it's name dropped by the Robert Patrick character, what was his name? Baggerly. Herman Baggerly. When he mentions the church.
Yeah.
And then we also see a picture of the Tatiana Maslany character, who we have not met as of yet, who's I think was it like Sister Alice or something?
Yeah.
I can't read. I jotted things down. It was the Radiant Assembly of God. Oh, lovely. And look, we've all seen the ads where we see her being Tatiana Maslany in the series being very strident and whatever, so we know she's going to be. And you don't go and get an actress like that if she's not going to play an important part in the series. So we know whatever this mystery is, it's about to get a in great noir fashion. It's probably going to get a whole lot murkier and more muddy or muddled, I should say, because it's probably going to involve this whole church thing, which is probably going to turn out to be some sort of a scam. Come on. And maybe that's where, and maybe the money kind of snakes its way through there. Whether it's from Robert Patrick's character, who that we know is rich, or there's something even more to it than that.
Well, what I like, and I think you and I talked off air before we started, is you have, I think what we're going to see is some sort of mini side plot in a week, like the Fatty Arbuckle thing, You know, because he's got to get paid and he's, you know, struggling. We're going to see those stories with the overarching mystery. And I think the overarching mystery had just enough to keep us interesting through the first episode. But when the one henchman killed the three others, when the cop killed the three others, to me, that thought made the thought this is going to be something really big. And I thought what was compelling about that is he tells them, the guy he kills, you know, they made you. And he only found that out because Perry had went and talked to the cop at the bottom of the hill.
Right.
So now they know that Perry's not, you know, he's not dumb. He knows what he's doing. And that guy knows it now. So things will get more interesting. And his partner, I thought that interaction in the, when he breaks in the apartment, you know, he sort of badmouths him, but lets him have his way, which I thought was interesting. You know, in traditional film noir, they'd have ran him off and beat him up. But he says, you know, lock up when you leave. And
my feeling on that was, and I appreciated it, by the way. This isn't me being negative about it at all. Usually there is the one cop who's kind of sort of friendly slash friends with the PI, but no one else is. And they're the ones who are probably going to be somewhat more permissible to him than everyone else. If you go, you can go all the way back to the Maltese Falcon, and you know there's the cop he gets along with, and the cops who don't like him. You can go right up to, or take it all the way to Chinatown. There's the cop that he obviously worked with, who knows him, who kind of is more willing to cut him slack. And there's a guy who he has a great line about how he fucked his wife and stuff. So, right. Hey, first curse in the podcast, my fault. So I kind of like that. And also it's fun because I think, you know, we all recognize that actor. I was like, oh, wow, he's come a long way since Lost or whatever.
Yeah.
So,
overall, I went into it surprised and I was very pleased with what I saw. I'd heard on a Facebook page someone say something about a bad review. I didn't read any reviews. I didn't read any advanced press. I wanted to go into it clean. All I knew was it had Matthew Rhys and I was in. And I mean, I enjoyed that. I enjoyed the story structure. I really liked the character development. And, you know, I'm interested to see where it will go next, because where it ended, you know, you see him laying out the pieces on the floor and looking at that piece of thread again. And, you know, as we got towards the end, I mean, you know, like all good shows, I want to know what happens next. And yeah. I really enjoyed it.
Same here. I enjoyed pretty much everything about it. Like you, I hadn't actually read any reviews. I was aware, I had seen, what do you call it, like the little headlines or blurbs kind of a thing. So I was aware of that. What I had seen didn't seem, I wouldn't say it seemed super negative, it just seemed kind of, kind of a thing. And I said, look, everything about this, I want to judge for myself. Let me see how it goes. I appreciate the talent I see on screen. We have a lot of fine actors. I'm aware of a lot of people behind the scenes. I love the fact that they got Timothy Van Patten on board to direct. I believe he directed this episode. I don't know if he's going to direct all. I don't think he's going to direct all eight, but he's definitely going to direct some of them. For anyone, probably most folks know who Timothy Van Patten is at this point, but in case you don't, I always enjoy the fact that people always seem to remember that the 70s had all these TV actors who went on to be big deal directors. You had your Ron Howard, you had your Penny Marshall, you had your Rob Reiner, there's probably a few others. But I always say, hey, you know who we all forget? The guy who played Salami on The White Shadow, you know, he ends up being one of the most accomplished TV directors in the history of television. You know,
absolutely.
Directing
Sopranos,
Boardwalk Empire, Game of Thrones. I mean, basically, if HBO needed a go-to guy, he was their go-to guy. I mean, I would say probably his work on The Sopranos is probably his most impressive work because he's behind some of the truly great episodes of that show. But you know there's a certain comfort level you have knowing he's the guy behind the scenes putting this thing together, and you could see the feeling of things like a Boardwalk Empire and like that one while watching this. I'm on board with it. I'm also a sucker for the, as I said, I'm a sucker for the time period. I'm a sucker for this kind of a genre. I'm intrigued by the fact that you have the major overarching mystery. I'm just curious who came up with the idea of sewing the baby's eyes open, because that was like the one really terrifying and creepy detail that you might not necessarily catch in a noir film of the past that I can recall seeing.
Right. Well, that's the thing to me, that kidnapping gone wrong means something terrible happens and the baby dies. And but sewing the eyes open is so weird
It feels more
that
planned.
there's something deeper than like the baby was accidentally killed or dropped, or
Exactly.
there's something more to it. And there was the thing about Tim Van Patten's direction, and to obviously from the look of this show, they spent money. The sets are impressive. The attention to detail, the camera he carries around,
Oh, yeah.
the props are excellent. The outfits are excellent. That even if the writing doesn't hit a home run, and I think this was really good, but if you put Tim Van Patten in the director's chair, it's going to be well made, even if the writing's not great. The production will be done, and I thought the production value was great, the way it looked was great, and the storytelling devices we've already discussed. I really enjoyed the way they told the story, and I hope it keeps going, and because I really enjoyed watching it and talking about it.
Same here. The only other thing I want to mention before I close it out is I think he's like the HBO go-to guy sometimes, even though I have seen him on other networks. Shea Whigham being in this,
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. Great. Great.
speaking of Boardwalk Empire, probably the show where he got his most notice of all the things he's done. But he's been on everything from that to Agent Carter and everything in between. But love seeing him on this. Looks like he's slimmed down a little bit. Very nice. And finally, actually, two things. I'll mention a positive and a negative. Positive is I loved the brief title card that they threw up there for Perry Mason. I loved it. It was just a straight out of like a 1930s or 40 or 40s movie. When the words Perry Mason appear on screen, and even as like the little HBO stuff on the bottom of it, and he literally walks right through the titles.
Loved it.
That was I did not expect that. I went, oh, you're just really just trying to go out of your way for me now, guys, aren't you? However, I only have one little teeny tiny itty bitty teensy weensy negative thing to say, and I'm gonna be a jerk about this. Come on, guys. You can't come up with a little version of the classic theme to put in there somewhere. The theme is jazzy and awesome. It has a noirish quality to it if you do it the right way. What? Come on. You could just do it for the closing credits. That's all. Just you don't have to. Just somewhere. Just give it to me.
Maybe they'll surprise you, Scott. Maybe that will come in at some point.
God damn it.
But it is a great thing.
I ask for so very little. Yeah, give it up for Raymond Burr. He's in two series that have pretty well-known themes, and
Yeah.
people sometimes forget, and I think sometimes people forget the great Ironside theme. And they're like, "Hey, you like that Kill Bill? Yeah, guess what they use in that music? You're always going where? That's the goddamn Ironside theme. Come
Yep.
on." Anyway. All right, so we will be back next week. We It is my plan, my hope, and my plan that we will try to get these things recorded, if not the same night, i.e., Sunday night, then hopefully Monday night we will get this thing recorded. So you guys will have it in your hot little hands or your hot little ears, whatever the right phrase is there. Whether I post it late Monday night or early Tuesday morning, I haven't made up my mind yet. But at this rate, it's probably going to be Tuesday morning. But hopefully you guys have enjoyed this podcast. If you did, chances are you'll enjoy hanging out on our podcast page as well. It's the Serious TV Drama Podcast page. Like the page, and you can talk about shows like Perry Mason and so many others that we talk about there. You can also find us on the iTunes, although I feel like that's becoming more and more out of date the more we talk about it. But if you punch in Serious TV Drama Podcast there, you can find us there. You can subscribe to the feed, rate, and review us there if you like. Hey, you can go to our podcast page. It's the stvdpodcast.podbean.com. Just figured I'd throw that in there because that's the place you can go where you can find all 250 other episodes of our podcast in this, what I call our season 7. Technically, yes. Anywhere else I need to direct you guys? Oh yeah, Twitter. We have a Twitter, Twatter, whatever. It's at STVD Podcast. STVD as in Serious TV Drama Podcast. So Brian, I am so happy you decided to climb aboard, despite all the woes of the world, and despite the fact that when I first thought of you for this podcast months ago, it's because I thought it was going to be a show about Perry Mason, the lawyer. And I thought, Brian's a lawyer. Perfect. And then I found out, oh, he's not really going to be practicing law. I'm like, okay, but there's a lawyer in it. So, yay, anyway. Yay for Brian.
Well, I will say in this crazy time we're living in, this was an excellent diversion of an hour of my brain space that took me to a different place that I really enjoyed. And I hope our listeners are enjoying it and take this ride with us, because I've really enjoyed talking about it with you, Scott.
I so much enjoyed talking about it with you as well. And like I said at the beginning of this podcast, it's a lo-fi affair, friends. Danny Boy, the usual co-host, is not going to be able to participate in most of these podcasts, though I have a feeling he will pop in eventually, because this show is so much up his alley. He's got to check it out, I'm sure. But without him around, that means there's no post-production work to be around, which means I'm literally playing music off of my phone, which is why it sounded so weirdly tinny at the beginning of this podcast. Here's what happened, which I didn't mention before. After I did that at the beginning of the podcast, I believe I accidentally deleted the file that I played. Now, I'm looking at my phone right now, and for some reason, for the last several months, when I record something in the voice memo section, it just puts it down as my address. So it's like it's my address over and over, like, you know, with the number 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. So I'm just looking at it, I'm like going, okay, I know that I recorded multiple versions of that theme the other night, getting ready for this podcast, and this one looks like roughly the same length as what I played before, so this might be the Perry Mason theme in 8-bit yet again. It might not be. I actually have the actual Perry Mason theme here, and I'm tempted just to hit play on that, even though I know it's not going to sound good, because I know it's going to sound weirdly distorted over the microphone, so I'm afraid to play that one.
Let me say, Scott, no need for apologies. You know why? We don't punish people with ads.
That's true. We don't do that. The other thing, and the one I'm most tempted to play, but it's almost 2 minutes long, which is why I'm not going to play it. If you go back and you find it on YouTube, apparently when they first brought Perry Mason back for an 80s TV movie, probably was like 1983, 84, around that time, maybe 85, it actually begins with the original opening, like for a few seconds, but it's all weirdly distorted, and it goes, it just comes back, and, you know, with a more grandiose version of the theme. I did record, actually, want to hear what that sounds like? It's kind of funny. Here, I'll just It's only like 15 seconds. So check this out. Wait for it.
That's pretty 80s.
Come on. How awesome is that?
That's, you know, full-on synthesizer 80s, man.
But the whole, I saw that, I heard that, and I was like, oh, can I use that? And then I said, you know what? It sounds weird just playing it off of YouTube in general. It's not going to sound good over that microphone. I guarantee when I play this file back later on, I'm going to be like, ew, that's 22 seconds. It's not going to sound good on the podcast. So I'm not going to play any music at the end now. I'm kind of gun shy. So I'm just going to say goodnight while I still can. Once again, Brian, thanks for joining and look forward to recording with you next week. Oh, by the way, probably within that same amount of time, me and Dan will be reuniting again for at least one, if not two episodes of Dark Season 3. Yeah. So there you go.
Well, Scott, I look forward to that. I enjoyed the Season 2 discussion, and I look forward to that podcast.
I'm glad you will look forward to it. I look forward to being done with it. No, I'm just kidding. That's what I'm talking about. Anyway, once again, thanks again for listening. Thanks again for joining, and we'll check you guys out next week.